Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Hey everybody, thanks for joining us at another edition of College Football Insiders Radio here on the Fantasy Sports Channel, brought to you by All Access Football Radio. Glad to have you aboard again for another week of college football. We have 1 hour here to break down all the championship games, and this week every conference is jumping into the mix. We have, you know, obviously we have the SEC championship game featuring 1 versus 2, Alabama, Florida. Winner goes on to the BCS championship game. We have the Big 12 title game, which features Texas also in a win, and they're in the game. You know, if they win that game, they will be moving on and playing in the BCS title game. We also have the ACC championship game featuring Georgia as well as Clemson. And then the other conferences, you know, the ones that don't even have conference championship games per se, conferences like the Big East and Pac-10, they have, you know, de facto championship games. Tonight, Oregon takes on Oregon State in a winner-takes-all battle, going on to the Rose Bowl. The Civil War rivalry takes it to another level in the Big East. Pittsburgh toast to undefeated Cincinnati. The winner of that game wins the Big East crown and will go to a BCS bowl. And joining us to talk about, you know, some of these games, our special guest today, we have Jeremy Fowler of the Orlando Sentinel. He covers the Florida Gators. We have columnist Kirk Bowles of the Austin American-Statesman, who's been covering the Longhorns since before I even knew college football existed. We have editor of the Bama Magazine, Kirk McNair, talk a little Alabama Crimson Tide and how they will match up with the Florida Gators and hopefully this year turn the tables from their perspective. We have Kelron Sykes, our very own super scout and former Oregon State Beaver, so you know where his loyalties lie. And I'll tell you one thing, I got a text from him already about how the Beavers are going to pull off the upset with about 35 exclamation points following it. So he is pumped up and jacked up for this football game tonight at 9 o'clock on ESPN. Huge, huge game in the Civil War. So we got all the insiders coming to us to break down the games, and we'll talk about all the other games as well. We look forward to hearing from you. If you want to call in and ask any of our guest questions, the number is 347-945-6275. That is 347-945-6275. I've also jumped in the chat room right now, and if you want to, you know, chat about any of the championship games, join me in the chat room as well. Welcome everyone there. We have a couple people there already, so if you want to chime in with your questions in the chat room and call in when the guests come on to ask some questions about these games, feel free. Pack football weekend, final weekend. You kind of like, you know, what the Pac-10 and Big East are doing by adding that, you know, final game, pushing their schedule back. The Big Ten is the only conference that doesn't do this. They're staying more traditional and makes it that much more of a pack fill Saturday with big games all around from, you know, noon to midnight. I love it. Noon to midnight extends to week 14 this year with big games, BCS deciding games. Kelron Sykes should be joining us shortly to break down the Pac-10 championship game, we can call it now, first time ever for the Civil War, where it's a winner-takes-all game, goes on to the Rose Bowl. It's been a while for Kelron's Beavers, so I know he's pumped up and excited for that game. But before we get to that, let's talk about some of the coaching changes, and let's start with, you know, Bobby Bowden. Coach Bowden stepped down. Obviously, I think he would have liked to come back. Somebody in my age group in the mid-30s who grew up watching college football and learning the game of college football in the 80s and 90s, basically, to me, Bobby Bowden was college football. He was, you know, people like to say he's Florida State football. Somebody in my era, he was college football those 15 years, 14 straight seasons in the top five. Are you kidding me? Nobody's ever going to match that. Nobody's ever going to do that. And he always had his teams peaking at the right spot. You know what I mean? Moving up and getting better as the season went on. So he won 2 national championships. I honestly, I think if they had a playoff, he could have even done better. You know what I mean? Their MO was lose an early or mid-season type game to Miami, and then from there just roll win after win and, you know, spank somebody in the bowl game and end up finishing in the top five. They were peaking and playing great football. We had Coach Bowden on in the spring, and, you know, it was great. First time ever we had him on, and I'm so happy now that we did get him on, you know, one time before he did step down as a coach. He was as gracious, as insightful, and as entertaining as you would think and as you could expect and as you could want from, you know, whether it's from my perspective as a host interviewing him or from a listener's perspective. It was great stuff. Check out the archives at All Access Football on Block Talk Radio, you know, / All Access Football, and you can listen to that interview with Bobby Bowden that we did in the spring. It was great stuff to have him on, and, you know, it was an honor to have him there. We want to wish Coach, you know, all the success and whatever he decides to do moving on from here. You know, hopefully he can stay in the game of football in some capacity. And, you know, bottom line is the game isn't going to be the same without him. Let's see how Florida State does. You know, I heard somebody else say this earlier in the week. You know, you look at the top coaches around college football right now. You know, as great as Urban Meyer is, Steve Spurrier won in Florida. You know, Oklahoma didn't need Bob Stoops to become Oklahoma. Texas was a premier program before Mac Brown got there. Check it out. Go see how Florida State was doing before Bobby Bowden got there. This man, you know, basically built a program from nothing. He was one of the first guys to he set the blueprint, you know, for an upstart program, go out and schedule road games against the big boys, knock the big boys off, and then people can't help but take notice. You know, people don't remember, even people of my era, of my age, I don't remember. But once upon a time, Florida State was not one of the big boys. They had to play and earn their way into that slot, and that's where they are right now. All right, Kelron Sykes is dialed in, and as I said, I know this man is jacked up and geeked up and ready for tonight. I bet, you know, he wishes he could suit up and get ready and play in this game himself. I know he could taste that Rose Bowl. They were so close last year and didn't finish a job. They have another chance to do it this year. That's his Oregon State Beavers, and let's bring Kelron on. Hey, Kelron, what's up, buddy? How's it going today?
Hey, Daniel, what's going on? Great day to be a Beaver.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to give the listeners a little insight when I started the show and said, you know, me and you exchange text, you know, on a regular basis every single week, but I think you use more exclamation points in your text today than you have in the past year combined. That's how pumped up you are for today.
Oh, yeah, it's an exciting day, and once again, it's an opportunity for us to go to the Rose Bowl since 1962, I believe, and golly, we got to go down there in Austin Stadium and do whatever we can to pull out a victory, and I think we will tonight.
Yeah, and for people out there, too, we have a packed full show, as I said, you know, in addition to Kelron, we have from the Diamond Magazine, Kirk McNair, the editor, coming on, Jeremy Fowler, who covers the Florida Gators for the Atlanta Sentinel. We got Kirk Bowles, longtime columnist of the Austin American Statesman to talk some Texas football. But, you know, if you want to get more on this Oregon State game, don't forget, go to Block Talk Radio / College Football Insiders, and you can check out a one-on-one interview I did with Ed Dixon of Oregon, and we also have an interview there with Coach Riley of the Oregon State Beavers. So you can kind of, you know, I asked both of them about this rivalry. They gave their takes. You can check it out there. Kelron, you know, let's start with the quarterbacks here. You know, the game is about throwing, running, and catching on offense. So let's start with the throwing part. Sean Canfield versus Jeremiah Masoli, two of my personal favorite quarterbacks. You know, watching Jeremiah Masoli a couple times, I love the competitive nature of this kid. He's not a polished quarterback by any means in terms of, you know, his passing. He's not very pretty, but the man gets the job done. And I'll be honest with you, I was never a big Sean Canfield fan. I always liked Lyle Moore better as a college quarterback. But Sean Canfield has really impressed me this season, and I think, in my opinion, has raised his stock as much as any quarterback What a pretty pass this kid throws. Tell me, you know, what's your take on these two QBs heading into this big game?
Well, Daniel, I think you hit the nail on the head on both quarterbacks. I think definitely Masoli is definitely an edge quarterback in terms of his strength is getting out the pocket and throwing on the run and creating opportunities with his feet. And obviously he does have adequate arm strength. But Sean Canfield, he's, like you said, his stock is, you know, rose tremendously. He's definitely a great pocket, definitely has great pocket awareness and does a good job in delivering, you know, his intermediate routes and going through his progressions. And, you know, he should have a good game today, and I expect him to have a good game. But nevertheless, his stock has definitely risen, and wildly, I'm excited. It's going to be a great matchup tonight in terms of those two guys. And, I'm just jacked for this game tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing the development he's made. You know, as I said, I spoke to Coach Riley in that interview. We talked about some of the scouting stuff. And basically, you know, early in the year, it was kind of like, oh, number five, how's that guy doing? And now all the scouts know Sean Canfield's name, and they're looking to see more and more tape on him. How about the running aspect? You got little man Jacquizz Rodgers, you know, more powerful than his size might indicate.
Yeah.
Very, you know, tightly built. Muscular kid, and then you got LaMichael James, who's basically, I believe he's got more 20-yard runs than anybody in the country. Two Texas kids playing up there in Oregon. Tell me about those two backs.
Well, it just shows, it goes to show what, you know, both schools have done in terms of recruiting, in terms of branching out of California and Oregon and upper part of Washington to get the recruits, and both guys are tremendous running backs. You know, obviously Rodgers is that guy who, you know, he's an edge runner in terms of zones and reaches and whatnot. But I think James has come on a lot this year, and he's a tremendous running back with a bright future. Rodgers, like you said, you know, he shows tremendous, you know, strength in terms of running the ball and whatnot, and breaks a lot of tackles. And it's going to be interesting to see who can create, you know, which team can create the matchups. And, you know, obviously both those running backs need to touch the ball at least maybe 12 to 15 times to, I think, pull out a victory tonight.
All right, and talk to me a little bit about the pass catchers. You know, one side features James Rodgers, who's really developing nicely as a receiver. That's Mr. You know, that's Jacquizz's big brother. He's a junior. And on the other side, you know, their primary pass catcher is their tight end, Ed Dixon, a really athletic kid that they can move around in all different spots in that spread offense.
Yeah, Dixon is, one of the best tight ends in the country. Obviously, you know, he can line up, you know, a traditional spot at tight end, also put him out there in the slot to create matchup problems. And he's, you know, he does a tremendous job, and, you know, separated from defenders and whatnot. And, you know, big guy with soft hands. And, you know, Rodgers, you know, he's a guy that you can line up also on the slot, does a good job on reverses. And he does a lot of the intangible things for the Beavers that make them dangerous offensively.
All right, folks, if you want to call in, the number is 347-945-6275. If you're listening on All Access Football Radio through Blog Talk or the Fantasy Sports Channel, chime in, give us a call. Coming up will be Kirk McNair to talk about the SEC Championship game. He's the editor of Bama Magazine. Also, you can feel free to join the chat room. I'm right there chatting it up, and if you have any questions, you can throw them that way if you're a little shy and don't want to get on the radio. But don't be shy. Call in. Dial in. Kelron, how about on the other side of the ball, defense? You know, both of these teams, we focus a lot on the offense, but who could be a defensive difference maker in this game?
I think Keaton Kristic, you know, and, you know, Stephen Powell will be, they should have tremendous games tonight. Those are two guys that you should watch out for. I mean, Stephen has done a good job in terms of stopping the run and whatnot, and Keaton does a good job in pass coverage in terms of, you know, doing the spot drops and cover two and zone drops, and both guys play tremendously. Obviously, with the Ducks, you know, you go with T.J. Ward. You know, he's playing tremendously this year. You know, he's done a great job. He's probably a defensive MVP for the Ducks. I think he's an East-West invite, and a high draft pick for this coming up April draft. And, golly, it should be an exciting game. You know, you got prolific players on both sides of the ball. And, it's going to be a tremendous game tonight. You know, a lot is riding. Obviously, the Rose Bowl is riding, you know, for the winner of the game. And, you know, it's about who's going to eliminate the mistakes and whatnot and have fun.
Now, before I ask you for your prediction, Kelron, you know, you're somebody that's played in this game. Give the listener, you know, in my opinion, you know, this is a little bit from an outsider's perspective, obviously, but in my opinion, this might be the most underrated rivalry in college football. Somebody that's played in this game multiple times, that's gone on the road in this game, what's you know, bring us in. Give us a little insight. What's the atmosphere like? What's the Civil War like?
It's pure hatred, you know, Dan. I mean, obviously those guys don't like us and we don't like them. You know, the alumni, and it carries on to grandmas, grandpas, and generations upon generations of hatred. You know, so, you know, getting up for the week, obviously, you know, those coaches keep everything in perspective in terms of, you know, hey, we're here for a game, but at the same time, you know, we have to win this game. But also on the flip side of that, we don't like each other. You know, Corvallis and Eugene are 45 minutes apart from each other. You know, we see each other, you know, at the malls and whatnot. You know, I was frequently, you know, encounters in Portland and whatnot, and the guys just don't like. They don't like orange. We don't like green. You know, we don't like ducks. Obviously, they don't like beavers. So it's a heated battle.
Give us your prediction then. Are you going to shock us here, or are you going with the hometown team pulling off the upset?
Well, obviously, Oregon is playing tremendously. I mean, you know, since the Blair Blunt incident versus Boise in September, you know, Oregon has been on all cylinders, you know, offensively and defensively. Oregon State, you know, had a couple of lapses here and there in the season, obviously with the SC game and, you know, Stanford game. But I'm going with the Oregon State victory, 35-17 victory. Oregon State on play Ohio State in the Rose Bowl.
35-17, so we're talking about a convincing victory.
Oh, yes, definitely. I have to stay true. I have to stay true to the Oregon State, to my Oregon State people. I can never show
my face
in Oregon if I didn't.
I mean, I'm not a homer here, but I'm with you. I love the way the Beavers have been playing. They have one more loss, but, you know, people, you know, don't forget, they also play a team like Cincinnati out of conference. So that, you know, that was definitely a tough game for them,
yeah.
And they definitely have a chance here. I think Oregon State, as always, Coach Riley has this team playing their best football at the end of the season. That's what you like to see, and it's been a while. I think it's time for them to win this game and go to the Rose Bowl.
You're right. I think, you know, if the Beavers can keep Masoli contained in the pocket and force him into passing situations, and those edge guys, those defensive ends, make sure he stays in that pocket, you know, with their upfield rush, and force them in second and long and third and long situations. I mean, that's our bread and butter in terms of, you know, what Mark Banker does on defense. And I think we'll pull this one out if we stay to that mold.
All right, Kelron, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some of your insight of this game. Go Beavers, and I will talk to you next week, buddy.
Hey, appreciate it.
All right, and as I said, folks, don't forget, if you want to here's some of those one-on-one interviews to really get you ready for tonight's game, go to blogtalkradio.com/collegefootballinsiders. And the two most recent interviews right there are Ed Dixon, tight end from Oregon, as well as Oregon State head coach Mike Riley. Check him out. Go there. Download him. Both of them give their take on this upcoming game, as well as a lot of other tidbits in terms of their teams, their individual selves, and what they like off the field, what their interests are like. Good stuff there. And don't forget also, for your fantasy news, you can go to FSC, I got it right, Fantasy Sports Channel, www.fsc.fm for all your fantasy news. Thanks for the Fantasy Sports Channel to have us on here talking some college football. We're waiting for Kirk McNair, the editor of Bama Magazine, to call in any minute now to give us some insight on the Crimson Tide and their chances this Saturday of upset in the Florida Gators. Before we get to the SEC championship game, let's talk a little bit about the ACC featuring Georgia Tech against Clemson. Both of those teams fell last week to SEC foes. Ironically, Georgia Tech losing to underdog Georgia and Clemson losing to underdog South Carolina. And you know that has the SEC faithful kind of pounding their chest and, you know, in superiority, saying, hey, you know, two of our middling programs take on and beat the best teams that you guys have to offer. A very exciting offensive game, I think, different stylistically, but a lot of playmakers. Clemson obviously features, you know, Jacoby Ford, the speedy wide receiver, C.J. Spiller, the do-everything tailback. On the other side, you have the big play wide receiver as well in Georgia Tech. You don't think about it with the Yellow Jackets and Demaryius Thomas, but he's a big play guy. Him and Nesbitt, you know, they don't have big overall numbers, but when they do connect, they connect for big, big plays. And don't forget Jonathan Dwyer, running the football, him and CJ. You know, he was actually the favorite for many people heading into the season as the ACC Offensive Player of the Year before Spiller really had his breakout season, his first chance to be, you know, the lone man in that backfield, not sharing it with James Davis. So he's really had a breakout year. But as I said, both teams losing to SEC teams last week, which probably had the people in SEC country pounding their chest, but they will look to bounce back this week and claim an ACC title. It will be the first for Clemson in quite some time, and if they win, it'll be their first BCS Bowl appearance. But joining us now, we have from the Bama Magazine editor Kirk McNair, and he'll be talking some SEC championship game with us. Hey, Kirk, thanks a lot for joining us again. We had you on a couple weeks ago to break down that game against LSU, and this week they're taking on the Florida Gators in the SEC Championship game. How are things going there in Tuscaloosa?
Well, things are going great. It's a football time around here. In fact, I'm in the press box at Bryant-Denny Stadium where we're having 2 days of the all six classification state championship football game. So we're getting our fill of football, watching some prospects for the future, and then, of course, gearing up for Saturday in the Southeastern Conference Championship game.
That's fantastic. You're making me jealous, man. I want to get on a plane and fly down there and check those kids out. You know, we can't wait to get the new crop in before the old crop even leaves, right?
That's right.
So, Kirk, let me ask you, last week, Crimson Tide were challenged by the rival, Auburn Tigers. Fell behind early, 14-0, fought back. We saw McElroy have a strong drive at the end. Do you think Auburn did anything there to expose the weakness in Alabama, to give Florida something to game plan with? Or do you think ultimately that this was the best thing for Alabama to have this kind of tight, tough fight heading into the championship game?
Well, since Alabama won the game, I think it probably was there is a little advantage there. Greg McElroy, Alabama's quarterback, had never been in a situation where he had to take a team 79 yards with the last possession he's going to have and get the winning points in a really tough, hostile environment. So from that standpoint, I think that was good. From the first part of your question, whether or not Florida would take anything from what Auburn did, I would say no. Auburn was not near the strong team that Alabama is, and they pulled out all the gimmicks. And to their credit, they had three good plays that really worked and led to two of them scored touchdowns and one led to a touchdown. And so those are good, but that's not Florida's modus operandi. They'll be doing the exact same things they've been doing to win national championships. They've got Tim Tebow, and trickery and deceit's not really part of their plan. They'll dance with what brung them, as they say. And Alabama's got to be prepared for the schemes and for the personnel, which are both very good.
Now, how about the fact that Auburn played a lot of guys near the line of scrimmage? I know Saban talked a little bit about that in his press conference or conference call, I should say. A lot of eight in the box to kind of put the game on the quarterback, on the passing game, and try to shut down Mark Ingram, which they did last week. Could we see something similar from Florida from that perspective?
Florida's defense is a little bit of a question mark today because of the unfortunate incident with Carlos Dunlap.
Right.
I'm not too sure what ordinarily they would not. They would not need to put a lot of people in the box. They've got, big, strong guys, fast guys, and they play pretty much a straight-up defense. But what they might do against Alabama, I would say they'd be more likely to take from what Auburn did from a defensive standpoint than from an offensive standpoint. But, again, they've got a different level of athlete than Auburn does.
Sure. Folks, you're listening to College Football Insiders Radio. The call number is 347-945-6275. If you have a question, we're breaking down the SEC championship game right now. You can also jump in the chat room if you want to throw a question there for myself or for Kirk McNair. He's the editor of Bama Magazine, and you can also check them out on BamaMag.com. That's on the Scout, the Scout.com family there. Kirk, you know, last time we spoke, there was question marks about the quarterback, McElroy. You know, he had that quick start, and, you know, at that time, he was kind of having that mid-season lull. It seems like he's pulled out of it, and in particular, that game-winning drive, you know, taking the team down the field, converting, I believe, four or five third-down plays with his arm on that game-winning drive. Talk about his development, and do you feel a lot more confident that he can win this type of game than you did a couple weeks ago?
I think that's a good point. A couple of weeks ago, you would have said that Greg McElroy's role in the championship game against Florida would be to not lose it, to just manage the team as best he could and not do anything that would cause Alabama to lose the game. Having had that drive against Florida, against Auburn, you know, maybe you raise the level of expectation of Greg McElroy a bit. And, you know, a minute ago we were talking about things Florida might do, whereas Auburn did have success in stopping Ingram with that crowded box. Florida might be a little reluctant to do that based on that last drive when McElroy sliced him up. I think he had seven straight completions, including the four-yard touchdown pass to win the game.
And talk to me a little bit about some of these matchups. There's a lot of great matchups here, whether it's, you know, Cody against the Pouncey Twins on the inside, Joe Hayden and that Florida secondary against Julio Jones trying to shut him down, and, or, you know, on the other side of the ball, you got the matchup of leaders and all coaches on the field, McClain versus Tebow. Which one is the most intriguing to you?
Boy, you mentioned a lot of good ones, and there are a lot of good ones. This team, this game is going to be full of outstanding athletes who are well coached. And, you know, it's, you're never wrong probably when you say, well, whoever wins the line of scrimmage is going to win. So you have really a more veteran team at Florida than you do at Alabama. But Alabama is a man-up defense. They've got real men on that defensive front. So it may be it'll come down that Florida's defensive front, even without Dunlap, and he's the best one, so that's not inconsequential. But if Florida's defensive front wins, you know, that might be the key. If Alabama's offensive front can prevail, that might be the key. So I don't think you're ever wrong thinking that's a possibility. The, you know, the wild card in this game, is, as everyone knows, is Tim Tebow. He, you know, there's only one Tim Tebow, and Florida's got him. So from Alabama's standpoint, he's got 100 more rushes and many more yards than their leading so-called running back. He is one of the most accurate passers you've ever seen and effective passers. So if Alabama can – he's a two-headed monster now. If you can make him one-dimensional, he's still a monster, but maybe a little bit more manageable.
All right, Kirk, well, give us the feel down there in Tuscaloosa. How are the Alabama faithful? Are they worried about this game, remembering last year being 12-0 and falling to the Gators in the fourth quarter when Tim Tebow was at his best, or are they supremely confident in Saban and his group and ready for, you know, adding on to the Alabama legacy with another national championship?
I would say that people are confident. You know, everybody's talking about the fourth quarter, but, you know, Alabama also remembers that after three quarters, Alabama was winning that game, and it was really, I'm not going to say a fluke, and I'm certainly not criticizing the call, but, you know, just a finger flick kind of a face mask call kept the Florida drive alive and scoring drive. Otherwise, they're punting back to Alabama in the fourth quarter with Alabama having the lead. And Alabama had just not too much earlier driven it 96 yards on the Gators. So I think Alabama people can remember the good as well as the bad.
All right, Kirk, before we let you go, what's your prediction here? Where do you see this game going?
Well, I've got a long-standing commitment to Alabama. I always pick Alabama to win, and I'm almost always right, so I'm not going to up there 12-0 for me this year. And I think the lower the score, the better it is for Alabama. So I'm picking a relatively low scoring game. I think Alabama 21-17.
All right. I mean, I guess since Nick Saban got there, you've looked a lot smarter then.
That's right. Well, I've been around here a long time, so I've seen. That's been my theory since about 1970.
All right, and that is Kirk McNair from Bama Magazine, also BamaMag.com on the Scout family there. Kirk, thanks a lot for joining us, and I think we're headed for a game.
I think so too, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
All right, and we're going to stay with the SEC Championship game as coming up now we have Jeremy Fowler of the Orlando Sentinel. He covers the other side here. He covers the Florida Gators, and he will give us his take on, you know, how his team, so to speak, is going to do this Saturday. Hey, Jeremy, how's it going today? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Anytime.
So, you know, I was just talking with Kirk McNair from Bama Magazine about this game, and he gave his take, and we were talking a little bit about the matchups, and this is something you've been covering a lot this week for the Atlanta Sentinel. You can check that out at blogs.orlandosentinel.com, and the matchups are just unbelievable. Let's start with the play along the line of scrimmage, you know, in the inside where the Pouncey twins will look to set the tone and kind of do their best in blocking Terrence Cody. I see where you have Mike Pouncey saying he ain't Superman, he could be blocked. So I guess they're a little tired of hearing about how unblockable Mount Cody can be.
Yeah, well, I think they're reflecting out of that fourth quarter last year when Florida's offense put up 141 yards and Alabama's offense put up 1 yard there in that last quarter. You know, they held their ground on him, and Tebow, for the most part, in that fourth quarter was able to pass pretty much pain-free, so Cody wasn't really getting to Tebow much. So they think that with Carl Johnson moving from left tackle to left guard now, and he's about 342, almost as heavy as Cody, when you have him plus the two Pouncey twins who are lighter than Cody, but they're both really tough guys. Those three in the middle, that's been a good formula for them last year and this year. And so they feel like with those three inside, they can handle Cody. Now, you know, he's going to stop some runs. It just depends on whether he's going to be able to penetrate and actually get to the quarterback. But Florida's running backs are, you know, 185 pounds soaking wet. So I assume that Cody will swallow them at least once.
Hopefully not whole.
Yeah.
You know, with Florida, Tebow gets so much attention, obviously. You have the skilled players and the speed, like a Demps, like a Rainey, Aaron Hernandez. How much do those interior linemen get overlooked, and how important are they to this offense?
Yeah, it's huge. They've kind of tinkered at the line all year because they had problems finding a dominant tackle on the left side mainly. And on the right side, they have a guy named Marcus Gilbert who's not dominating, but he's solid. So they had that solidified, but then left tackle, they had, you know, a guy, Carl Johnson, who's really better at guard, and they had another left tackle, Matt Patchen, who blew out his ACL. So they had some issues there, and they were giving up some sacks. Tim Tebow had a career high in sacks this year. I think it might be 25 up to this point, which is a lot for him, especially for a scrambler. So yeah, it's been interesting, but now I feel like they brought in a freshman named Xavier Nixon, who's been solid. You know, he's held his ground, and he's got a bright future. So with him there, if he can just survive on that left tackle, their interior is pretty good, and they feel confident in that. And it's been huge. It showed the last couple games, even though they've played inferior defenses lately. Florida State and Florida International. They've just looked better overall, more confident, and they're passing the ball a lot better.
You're listening to College Football Insiders Radio here on the Fantasy Sports Channel. With us now is Jeremy Fowler of the Orlando Sentinel. If you want to chime in, the number is 347-945-6275. Feel free to jump in the chat room as well if you have a question. Jeremy, let's move to the perimeter, and this is probably a more intriguing matchup for the fans. You know, they might not be lined up across from each other all game, but how about Joe Haden, the Thorpe Award candidate, against Julio Jones? How fun is that matchup going to be on Saturday?
Yeah, that's probably my favorite one because Jones is just so physical, and the fact that he's 6'4", I mean, I just wonder how much Alabama's going to try to go over the top on Haden. But, you know, when you got a quarterback like Greg McElroy, he's not exactly electric. You know, I don't know if Hayden's really all that worried, to be honest, because all year he's gone up against some good receivers, you know, A.J. Green at Georgia, Brian LaFell at LSU. And those teams didn't really have dominant quarterbacks either, and he was able to pretty much shut them down. I mean, there hasn't been a good receiver who's gotten more than 60 yards that I know of on Joe Haden. There was an Arkansas receiver, Greg Childs, who got a lot, but that was mostly on Janoris Jenkins, the other cover. So Hayden's been pretty dominant all year. But Jones is a different beast in the sense that, for, you know, possession-wise, you know, he can get those tough yards, and he's just so physical, and he's got the speed to match. So I'm interested to see how Haden can actually impose his will on him when Jones is stronger and has 5 inches on him.
All right, now I got to ask you, Jeremy, about Carlos Dunlap, the star defensive end, arguably the best player in the front seven of the Florida Gators. One, is this causing any distraction? And two, how much will they miss him on the field?
I think they're disappointed, and I think it is unfortunate, you know, for the players, and they're all friends, and I hate to see that. So I certainly think it's a strong distraction, maybe the biggest one of the year, especially the timing of it is just atrocious. 5 days before the game, the biggest game of the year, any other week, and it wouldn't have been nearly as bad. But at the same time, Florida is sort of conditioned to deal with distractions. They've done it all year. They had Tim Tebow concussion. They had a Brandon Spike suspension, a bad offense at times. They've had a flu outbreak. They've had some things, little mini dramas that help them in a situation like this. And they have a guy, Justin Traddow, who's kind of a defensive end and plays some inside for them, and they really like him. He's not the type that can get after the quarterback like Dunlap, but he's great stuff in the run, and he's a good, smart overall player, so they like him there. It's just Dunlap brings that X-factor quality that they don't have anymore. And plus, Jermaine Cunningham on the other side can be double-teamed. Which, when you have Dunlap, you know, he can roam free and get sacks on his own. So it'll be tougher for him.
You mentioned Tebow with the concussion. Obviously, this season, while he's still one of the Heisman Trophy favorites and surely to be invited to New York next Saturday, you know, his numbers are way down from what he did as a sophomore and a junior. But last week, was, you know, I think he might have looked the sharpest since that concussion. Does it look like we're going to see the best of Tebow on Saturday?
It seems like he's kind of peaking right now. And he did this last year, too, although he did it a lot earlier in the year, which made for a better performance and better statistics. You know, it took him nine and a half games, I'd say. Even the South Carolina game, he was still a little rusty in week 10. So, but the last 2 weeks, he's looked really solid. Again, defenses have been inferior. They really haven't been that good. But his football that he's throwing looks a lot more confident. You know, he seems to be more decisive, and he's stepping into throws now. Before, he got himself into some trouble just with some plain old-fashioned bad decisions. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds against a dominant defense, because Alabama will be the best one they've seen so far this year.
Talking to Jeremy of the Orlando Sentinel. He covers the Florida Gators and is headed towards that SEC championship game. As we speak, Jeremy, before I ask for your prediction and your pick, talk to me a little bit about what Auburn did last week. You know, they brought 8 in the box. They really shut down Alabama's running game, particularly their Heisman hopeful guy, Mark Ingram. Now, I know the Gators like to play the 3 safeties a lot, and, hey, when you got guys like Wright, Black, and Hill, who wouldn't, you know, play, you know, 3 safeties and a lot of 5 DBs? Now, are we going to see that mostly from Florida on Saturday, or do you think they might play a little bigger to match up Alabama's running game the way Auburn did?
I can see them tweaking a little bit to play a little bigger, as you suggested. I mean, I was really surprised that Ingram had, 30 yards rushing that game. I mean, it just, you know, he was rolling all year. and Auburn's had a great game plan. So surely Florida's taken note, and I think they'll have that package ready more often than not to try to stuff that run. But at the same time, their identity is to stay with the safeties, as you said, being able to roam and doing a lot of nickel package and you know, some Joker package as well. So Charlie Strong does like to mix it up, but at the same time, he likes to give his players the ability to roam free a little bit. So I don't know if they're going to change their identity, but I do think that they're going to really make a conscious effort after last week's game to be a little bigger up front.
Jeremy, where's your pick here? Are the Gators going to win it again, back-to-back SEC titles over an undefeated Alabama Crimson Tide, and potentially set themselves up for, you know, Urban Meyer's third championship in just 5 seasons in Gainesville?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I keep thinking about how Nick Saban, who's obviously a very bright coach, I have a hard time seeing him lose to the same guy twice. But at the same time, it's just it's simple math for me in the sense that if the teams are pretty equal in a lot of categories, it probably just comes down to quarterback play, and I'll take Tebow over Greg McElroy any day. So that's kind of how I look at it. I got Florida winning by, you know, 7 to 10 points.
Yeah, something tells me that you're not the only one that would take Tebow in that beauty contest.
Yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, yeah, their defenses are – even if Florida's defense has been dominant, Alabama, I think, at least match up with their defense. And they have a lot of the same components where they're both really strong. I see it coming down to quarterbacks.
All right, Jeremy, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time. And, you know, I think we're headed for a great contest on Saturday. Really looking forward to this game. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. And that is Jeremy Fowler, the Orlando Sentinel. As I said, you can all follow him online, blogs.orlandosentinel.com. And from there, you know, the /sports, you can find the Florida College Football page there with Jeremy's previews for this week's game. Very good stuff. And, you know, hey, where can you go here? I guess it's time for me to kind of give my pick here before we bring on Kirk Bowles of the Austin American Statesman to talk about his Texas Longhorns. I myself am leaning a little towards Alabama, even though the Gators do have that quarterback edge with Tim Tebow over McElroy. I think Alabama has a little more balance offensively in that, you know, Tebow is asked to do so much and is asked to do it all. So even if he outplays McElroy, that doesn't necessarily mean that the Florida offense as a whole will outplay the Alabama offense. You know, he's their top passer and their top runner, so he's asked to do so much, which I don't think was necessarily the big thing, the best thing for them. I don't think it was also what they wanted to do, even though it's worked out to this point. Obviously, they are 12-0, unblemished. You know, they really weren't challenged out of conference this year, Florida, so I think that helps a lot in terms of their schedule. You know, I think ideally they would have liked to see Tebow run a little less, just like last year. I think that's why they had a better year last year than his Heisman Trophy year. But, you know, Jeremy's right. The defenses on both of these teams can win this ball game for sure. I lean a little bit towards Alabama. Hey, it's going to be a nip-tuck game, no doubt about that. I'm looking for something like 17-14, 20-17, a game coming down to the wire with the Crimson Tide finding a way to pull it out. Let's talk a little bit about the Big East game. Let's not forget about that matchup. That's a key game this weekend with the Cincinnati Bearcats, who knows? Hey, Cincinnati is still alive in this. They're 11-0, and if, you know, somehow Texas were to fall to Nebraska, which has happened before, I believe, if I have the number right, top five teams are only 6-5 in the Big 12 championship game, which isn't a stellar record by any means at all. That means this game could be potentially wide open. If Texas falls, could Cincinnati be that team to slide in? Could two Big East teams get in? Could it actually be better? This is an interesting question, I think. Could it actually be better for the Big East to see Pittsburgh pull off the quote-unquote upset? It's an upset in terms of rankings because, you know, Pittsburgh is not in the top 10. Cincinnati is up to number 5 on all the polls. We have them at number 4 just ahead of TCU. But could it actually be better for the Big East to see Pittsburgh pull off the upset and then potentially see Cincinnati make it as an at-large team to the BCS? Suddenly, the Big East could have, for the first time ever, two teams making it to the BCS Bowls, not just one, not just their representative. Now, on the flip side, we'd love to see a team go undefeated. We've heard a lot of talk about TCU. Do they deserve to go? It seems like for some reason Cincinnati doesn't get that love. I can't wait to see this game. I got to go with Cincinnati here myself. You know, I love Pittsburgh's defense. I think Wannstedt does have them going in the right direction, and the game will be in Heinz Field, so they have the home field advantage, which is why, you know, the number in terms of the point spread, I believe, is pretty close. I haven't checked recently, you know, but I believe it's pretty close to a pick'em type game. It's kind of a toss-up game, and which I think is fair the way the Panthers have played at home this season. They lost last week to West Virginia, ending their winning streak, and they also had a bad loss early in the year to North Carolina State, but they've been undefeated at home and played very well, particularly their quarterback, Bill Stahl. Those were his worst two games when they lost, so he's a key performer for them. But to me, you got to go with Cincinnati. I love what Tony Pike is doing. I think he's a guy that doesn't get enough attention, and if he didn't get hurt, I could see him very well being in the thick of the Heisman race himself. If he were healthy and, you know, for the full season, he was well on his way. I think he was ahead of McCoy and Tebow in terms of the quarterbacks out of the BCS conference, putting up some phenomenal, phenomenal numbers. I really think he could have been a guy who was a Heisman sleeper and surprising some people. But, you know, he's back now when they need him the most. His first game back was a couple of weeks ago when he only came in and threw four passes all within inside the 10-yard line and them going for touchdowns. Last week he came back and made his first start against Illinois. Obviously not a fantastic opponent, a team that's really struggling out of the Big Ten, but he did set a Cincinnati record throwing six touchdown passes. And while Wannstedt, you know, this is definitely his best year in Pittsburgh. I know he has a lot of doubters coming back from his struggles in the National Football League. They followed him to the college football, especially they always, until this year, they always seem to kind of get knocked off early. And we've heard a lot about the recruits that they're bringing in, but they've never really been able to kind of follow through and have the big-time season until this year. They have a chance for 10 wins. I still got to give an edge in coaching to Brian Kelly. And I think when you have such a close matchup of teams, I like what Kelly does. I got to give Cincinnati somewhat of an edge on this game, even on the road. I think Brian Kelly's going to find a way to win this game in Pittsburgh and see the Bearcats finish that season 12-0 and undefeated as Big East champs. Let's shift gears now a little bit, and we're going to talk some Big 12 championship with Kirk Bowles of the Austin American Statesman. He's been covering the Texas, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but I think he's been covering the Longhorns longer than I've even known college football existed, you know. So this is a man that has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to Texas football and college football in general. Hey, Kirk, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, glad to be with you.
So let's get into this game. Actually, before we get into this specific game, I find it very intriguing that, you know, this is a rematch of the first ever Big 12 championship game back in 1996 when Mr. James Brown made Longhorn fans across the nation feel good when they knocked off number two Nebraska. You know, bring us back to that game and the feeling of the Texas program from then to now.
Well, that was toward the end of John Makovic's regime here in Austin, and that was the kind of game that we thought might put him over the hump. They came into the first Big 12 championship game, a three-touchdown underdog to Nebraska, which was trying for its third straight national championship game. And it was being played in St. Louis, and I really don't think Nebraska gave too much respect to Texas. I think they lost about four games already that year. And James Brown, the sophomore quarterback for Texas, had said, well, maybe we'll beat them by three touchdowns. And, of course, everybody was aghast that he would even say such a thing. And Texas just went toe-to-toe with them. Nebraska had a bunch of players sick with the flu. And it came down to a really big fourth and inches play in Texas' own territory. And that's when John McVick went Bill Belichick on us, and he called this roll left. And it turned out a little better for McVick. So James Brown took the ball, the snap, rolled out in a bootleg, found his tight end Derek Lewis for about a 69-yard gain inside the Nebraska 10 to kind of salt away the game. And that's kind of been salt in the wounds of Cornhusker fans everywhere for a long time since.
Yeah, I'm sure it hasn't. I'm sure they would love to give a little payback this Saturday. Let me ask you a little bit about the Horns and last week's game against A&M when the defense really got lit up a lot. You know, Mr. Johnson from Texas A&M looked really great, and I know you're pretty high on him. So how much of that performance would you say was, you know, Johnson playing well, or was maybe Texas's defense a little exposed, and are they vulnerable heading into this contest?
Well, I think they might be vulnerable, Daniel, if Gerard Johnson transfers to Nebraska. I'm not sure Zach Lee or Cody Green presents the same type of threat, but you are right. I'm a big fan of Gerard Johnson ever since I saw him in a state high school All-Star game here in Austin at Royal Memorial Stadium where he was the MVP, and I've been high on him ever since. And I think he's got a great pro future, too. Now, A&M doesn't have much defense to go with him, and that – therein lies a lot of the reason Texas was able to score 49 points last week. So, honestly, you know, Zach Lee doesn't present the same type of challenge because Gerard Johnson's really got one of those guns for an arm, and he's a big, strong kid who can run very well, too. So, I'm not sure Nebraska's going to change his whole identity for this game, but if they could, you know, if they can get to, you know, Zach Lee to throw for 342 yards, I'm sure that Nebraska fans would love it.
Yeah, I'm sure they take it, but most likely if Nebraska is going to make it a game, it will have to be a defensive struggle, and you're right, they just don't have the weapons to kind of do what A&M did last week. Let's talk a little bit about the Texas defense, though. Two guys that intrigued me a lot for their play this year on the defensive line, and one is Sergio Kindle, who I think to me has had a disappointing season. He really hasn't been as productive as expected. And then on the positive end, Lamar Houston. I mean, I know in Big 12 country, when you have guys like Sue and McCoy from Oklahoma, it's easy to get overlooked. But, boy, he's having a heck of a senior year.
Are you talking about Sue?
No, Lamar Houston from Texas.
No, Lamar Houston, he's been a real bulwark in the middle there, you know, 6'2", 300-pound senior. And I've written this week, Daniel, that he's probably come as far in 1 year as any Longhorn player I can remember. And it was a little bit similar to Roy Miller. You know, Will Muschamp said a year ago, if you're going to be what we need you to be on our defense, you're going to have an outstanding year. And he did, and now he's in the NFL for Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Lamar Houston, who came in, most people don't know that, as a running back in Colorado. And they first moved him to linebacker, then defensive end, and he was a little reluctant to put his hand in the ground, as he says. But, you know, the proof is in the pudding, and I really think he's outplayed Sergio Kindle. And I know they're pushing Kindle for all the honors and everything, and he's a Hendrick Award finalist. But I think Lamar Houston has been the real story of that defensive line.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, from what I've seen, I don't think it's even close that Houston's outplayed Kindle. And, you know, as I said, I thought the reason I mentioned Sue is I think he gets overlooked a little bit there in the Big 12 country, but Houston's really had a great year. Another guy having a great year is Thomas in the secondary. I know you mentioned him as a deserving guy for the Thorpe Award. I couldn't agree more. He got my vote for the Thorpe Award. You also mentioned Shipley in terms of the Biletnikoff. How about Mr. McCoy? Do you think he's made himself with his game last week the front runner for the Heisman?
You know, I think he probably is. I know some of the polls have a mixture of Colt McCoy and Tim Tebow near the top. And, you know, I really think Daniel's probably come down to a two-man race between those two. With all due respect to Toby Gerhart, whose 26 touchdowns speak volumes about his year. Case Keenum really hadn't had a bad year at Houston. For several weeks, I had Ndamukong Suh for Nebraska at the top of my Heisman list. But I think with their performance the last half of the year, especially with Colt McCoy's performance against A&M on national TV, kind of set them apart. And also Mark Ingram rushing for just 30 yards against Auburn. You know, everybody has a bad game like that. Colt McCoy was very rusty against Oklahoma. That was by far his, you know, his worst day of the long. He only threw for 127 yards. But I really think it's going to come down to those two. I think whoever puts on the biggest show, obviously their team has to win the game. And if one of them has one of those Heisman moments, Daniel, you know, if Tebow, you know, breaks 122 tackles and route to the end zone on one of those plays, you know, that's going to resonate with voters. And it's it may be in such a wide open race where there's no clear-cut favorite, you know, it really may come into what have you done lately.
And we're talking to Kirk Bowles of the Austin American Statesman. If you're not local there in Austin, you can also check it out at statesman.com, where Kirk not only, you know, covers the Texas Longhorns, he's got a weekly column every week covering the Stand, the Nation of College Football. Kirk, what's your prediction for this Saturday's game? Are the Longhorns going to win in a blowout, or is Nebraska going to make this a game?
Well, I think Nebraska will make it a game because you're talking about such a prideful program, and you're talking about, you know, a team that's, you know, turned it around, you know, since those back-to-back losses to Texas Tech and Iowa State. You know, they kind of simplified their offense, and Zach Lee's only averaged like 18 pass attempts the last three games. So, you know, they'll want to win with Roy Helu and Rex Burkhead and some play-action passes from Zach Lee, and hopefully they get a Niles Paul punt return or a big play for a touchdown. And they'll probably, you know, they'll play the field position game, as we all know, Daniel, and they've got a great punter in Alex Henry. You know, he's one of the best punters and place kickers in college football. So I think if I'm Bo Pelini, I'm trying to keep it a tight game, a low-scoring game, and try to win like 14-10. But honestly, I just don't think they're going to have enough weapons. And I'm not sure that Nebraska defense can keep Texas offense controlled for 60 minutes. So I'm looking for something like a 21-10 Texas win, 24-14, somewhere in that neighborhood. But I think it will be a very competitive game just because of Nebraska's defense and punter.
All right, Kirk, before we let you go, just one quick question. If Texas does win the game and finish the year undefeated, is there any doubt in your mind that they are deserving of going to the BCS championship game, or do Cincinnati or TCU have any gripes?
Well, I think they do have gripes, and I'm one of these playoff guys, as you know, and I'd like to see, you know, nothing be better than this year where there's really hasn't been that one dominant great team, you know, from start to finish. But in Texas, non-conference schedule is downright weak, and I don't think they did anything there to really prove their merits or anything. That said, you know, having watched the team, the Texas offense is peaking at the right time. They're developed more of a running game. They're passing deep more to open up the field a little bit better. So, you know, I definitely think they're one of the top three teams in the nation, and I think that would separate them a little bit from the TCUs and maybe even the Cincinnatis.
All right, Kirk, thanks a lot for joining us. I really appreciate you giving us some time, and we're looking forward to this game, and maybe we'll have you on again before that BCS championship game.
Well, I'd love to talk college football with you. It's always fun, Daniel. You have a take care and have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And that's Kirk Bowles of the Texas Austin American. And as I said, if you know you can't check him out live, you know, can't pick up the paper, you can always go on the internet, statesman.com. His columns are there. Great college football insight, not only Texas stuff, but all around the nation. And folks, there are a couple of other championship games this week that I should bring up as well. There's the Conference USA championship game with East Carolina, looking to pull off the upset again against a high-powered offensive team that was ranked and getting a lot of attention last year. It was Tulsa, you know, a team that started out early, got big upsets. And this year it's going to be Houston and Case Keenum. Can the East Carolina Pirates pull it off again? They're a more balanced team. Don't be surprised if Kip Holtz wins another Conference USA title. And, hey, I wonder if that would intrigue the people at Notre Dame. Holtz and Notre Dame seems to have done well. I wonder if that could be a repeat. We haven't really heard that one at all, but just throwing it out there. And then finally, the MAC, which last year also featured an upset. We saw the Buffalo Bills knock off Nate Davis and Ball State, who were undefeated at the time. This year it's going to be Dan LeFever and the Central Michigan Chippewas taking on Ohio, kind of a surprise team there. Can Ohio pull it off and make it 2 years in a row, or the East pulls off the upset? We'll see. I got to put my money on Dan LeFevre, not literally, but I think he's, you know, I got the fever, and I think he's going to pull it off. Folks, thanks for joining us, and I hope to have you on next week.